it was like all the joys of fatherhood were just beyond my grasp for the first like 4.5 or 5 years of my son's life. And the last 2 years of fatherhood have been exactly what I pictured it would be like.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
This week's Art of Fatherhood podcast is being brought to you by Cigna. I had the great fortune of chatting with Dr. Stuart Lustig about the great work that he and Cigna are doing for the resilience campaign. As parents, we all know that resilience is arguably the most important skill that we could be teaching our children right now. It's the ability to quickly recover from challenges, and we've all been facing our challenges, and especially in 2020. Cigna conducted the largest study of resilience among children, their parents, young adults, and working adults. The Cigna Resilience Index showed that resilience is at risk for 60% of Americans surveyed, meaning that they may struggle to bounce back from challenges. This can have a real heavy impact on children. Make sure you go to artoffatherhood.net to check out my interview with Dr. Stuart Lustig, where we talk about fatherhood, of course, the great work that he's doing with Cigna. I highly encourage you guys to check this out. I learned a lot from Dr. Lustig, and I hope you guys do too. And also, make sure you go to their website for this program at cignaresilience.com. That's cignaresilience.com. What's up, everybody? Art Eddy here for the Art of Fatherhood podcast. And on the line, I'm very happy to have Jason Kander. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me, Jason. How you doing, sir?
I am doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're going to be talking a little bit about your podcast, Jordy 54. We're going to talk about your book, Outside the Wire, your service to this country. So thank you very much for that. But the main reason why I wanted you on here was to talk about fatherhood. So like I said, I'm very thankful for the stuff that you've done in the military and putting your life on the line for our just freedom and safety and all that. So thank you for that. Let's talk a little bit about fatherhood. When you found out you were going to be a dad, what was going through your mind, sir?
I mean, it'd be an understatement to say I was very excited, and probably I'm not the first dad on this podcast to say what I'm about to say, which is it immediately made me reflect on my relationship with my dad. And I'm really close with my dad. And growing up, you know, he was my baseball coach and my best friend, and in many ways became a dad to my closest friends. And I think at the time, and those who are familiar with me will know this, my son is 7 years old, and almost 2 years ago, I stepped away from public life for a while to get treatment for post-traumatic stress from my deployment to Afghanistan, and it had been a long time coming. And so, like a lot of people who were experiencing undiagnosed and untreated post-traumatic stress, I really struggled for about a decade to be anything other than emotionally numb and to be present around my family. And so I was really aware that it was a really special time and a special opportunity to be a dad, but I couldn't really feel it, and I couldn't really fully access it. It was like all the joys of fatherhood were just beyond my grasp for the first like 4.5 or 5 years of my son's life. And then I got therapy, and I made huge strides in my mental health. And the last 2 years of fatherhood have been exactly what I pictured it would be like when I was a kid, thinking about, you know, trying to be a dad like my dad. And now I coach my son's little league team. And
nice.
And so, yeah, for the longest time, I thought like my goal in life was, frankly, to be president. And now I realize my goal in life is to be my dad, and I'm doing it. And it's pretty tremendous.
I love it, Jason. And, you know, one of the questions I was going to ask you is, like, maybe the biggest challenge you faced as a father. And I think you kind of maybe just shared it right there, where once you finally got help just in regards to post-traumatic stress syndrome, that opened up to be for letting you become the dad you wanted to be, like kind of like following your dad's footsteps. Instead of asking the biggest challenge, let's talk about when you noticed, all right, I need to, you know, get this done. Did you see your son? And again, he's young, so it might be a little bit difficult question, or maybe just straight up no. But like, did you see the way your son maybe treated you once you got some therapy and you felt like you were able to be opened up and be a father you wanted to be? Like, did you see a change in his attitude towards you when that happened?
Oh, big time. And there were two reasons. One was, it was just, I was physically present, you know, more. I mean, because before I stepped back and decided to get treatment, for me, a big part of the way I self-medicated was I just dove into my work. Now, part of that also was I really cared about the country, and I was a very dedicated activist, but I was gone like all the time. I mean, I went to, in a year and a half, I mean, look, I was getting ready to run for president. So I did 47 states in a year and a half. Of those, I did events in Iowa and New Hampshire probably a dozen times each, right? So I spent, like, in 1 year, I think I did 300 flights in a year.
Wow.
So it was crazy.
Yeah.
And so part of it was just the natural thing of, like, being home. I mean, my son said to me about a year ago, he said, "Dad, there was a while where I almost forgot I had a dad."
Oh, wow.
So that obviously was a big difference. But then the other thing was that after I had, you know, been home for maybe 3 or 4 months, we noticed little things like my son's name is True. So like when True would come in the morning, if he would wake up before us, he started coming to my side of the bed to talk to me about whatever was bothering him. You know, little stuff like that. And then my wife was doing some traveling for work, and he would get really upset when she would leave, but not anywhere near as upset as like when I would then travel like every 6 weeks or so, because what had reversed was I had become the constant presence. Which was really, you know, as difficult as it was to have my son upset when I left, it was really gratifying that it just, you know, it wasn't just normal to him.
Yeah.
And what that's really owed to is like, while I was physically present more often, I was also just actually emotionally present for the first time since he ever met me. You know, we're thick as thieves now. I mean, we have, you know, all those fun stuff. We have our own, like, you know, like ball players, like guy gets a hit and he and the first base coach have like a ridiculously complicated high five thing. Like, yeah. You know, like my son and I have tons of those. And because I knew it was the right thing to say, and I knew it was how I wanted to feel. I used to be able to say, you know, nothing is more important to me than my family, and this is really the step that life is about. But I was, now looking back, I think I was mimicking human emotions, whereas now I actually feel those things at a deep level and believe them in every part of me.
I love all of that, man. And again, you know, you don't want your kid to be like crying or upset, but you kind of have that like, oh, he does miss me. And like, he, you know, you were that constant in his life. And when you, if you had to go somewhere now, he'd just like, where are you going? And, you know, be upset. So you have to appreciate that as a dad and the bond. I love the, you know, you guys signature high five you guys do together, being an Army captain, being Missouri's former Secretary of State, a lot of different things like hard work, dedication, patience, all these different virtues and values that you had to use in those jobs and then also just in life in general. What are some of the core values you and your wife are looking to instill into your son as he's growing up?
So we have a family motto that is real simple. We call it the three things, and it is try hard, never quit, have fun. And that's
nice.
You know, and that's, yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, I mean, like everything else flows from that. I mean, we talk about a lot of other things. We, more than I ever did in the past, we talk a lot about feelings and emotions and stuff like that. We do, I think, a pretty good job of normalizing for him the idea of having feelings and emotions. And we work really hard not to, to teach him not to suppress things. And while we're, you know, we talk about this a lot, my wife and I, there was a time like, before I stepped away and got mentally healthy and was so driven, and so was she in a lot of ways, by professional accolades and accomplishments and career stuff, I think we were thinking initially about, like, we want him to be really smart. We want him to be a really good athlete. You know, that's all great. And he is really smart, and he is a pretty darn good athlete. But actually, none of that's our goal anymore. What we talk about now is, like, we just want to raise a kind, confident, and happy kid. And that's really our guiding principles. But the way it's related to him is try hard and never quit, have fun. And I'm really proud. Like, he plays sports, and he's like I was, which is, he's not the most athletic kid, and he's not the biggest kid. But he is the kid who will not quit and thinks that the fun part is the not quitting. Like,
yeah.
The fun part is the hustling really hard. And one of my proudest moments of him playing sports was when he was at like a little soccer practice and, you know, some of the other kids would kind of flake out and be difficult, you know, cause he was only like six, I think, at the time. And it was only about a year ago. And so the coach asked me, he said, "Hey, how is it that you got True to act like that, you know, and to not get upset when he gets a little bit hurt and to just keep going and have this hustle attitude. And I was like, Drew, come here. And Drew walks over and I was like, Drew, what are the three things? And he goes, try hard, never quit, have fun. And I'm like, okay. And then he runs back and plays. And the coach was like, that's awesome. and so that's our three principles. Just try hard, never quit, have fun. And what he recently said to me, I'm kind of monologuing, I apologize.
This is perfect, though. This is great.
He told me, we were coming back from a practice, and he's sitting in the back of the car. He's like, hey, Dad, I figured something out. And I was like, what is it? And he goes, I figured out why you always tell me to try hard, never quit, and have fun in that order. And I was like, why? And he said, because if I try hard and I don't quit, I always have fun. And I was like, yeah, man. And that was like a big, like, okay, we're doing some things right. Like, yes. He's discovering this on his own, you know?
Yeah. Right then and there is such a reward in parenting, right? When the stuff that you're trying to instill into your child, they say in a way that they can confirm that they're understanding it, they affirm that they're listening to it, and they're actually using it in life. And that's just as like, that's worth its weight in gold right there. So I love that. And the three things that you guys do just reminded me of my basketball coach in eighth grade. He said, play hard, play smart, and have fun. It just definitely struck a chord with me. It just reminded me of my old basketball coach from like eighth grade.
He clearly made an impression because you're still invoking him, right? Yeah. I mean, that's great.
Talk about something that you have learned from your son. Of course, we always, as parents, want to teach our kid things. Like, we're talking about the values and all that stuff. But you know this as well as I do, is that you learn a lot of things about life and yourself through your kids. So what is something that you've learned through your son, either about yourself or about life in general?
Oh, man, it's a long list, but I'll start with 2 hours ago when he comes downstairs and works out with me a fair amount. And sometimes that's difficult because, like, I have a workout I want to do, and he's seven, and that's not what he wants to do. And he knows that I've been trying to do, you know, that jump rope move that boxers do where they cross their arms and the rope still goes under them and then they keep going. It's like a jump rope like trick, and I've been trying to get it for weeks and I can't get it. I've whipped myself in the face and all that. So my son came downstairs and like picked it up right away, and then he taught me how to do it, which was not really what you meant, but that happened an hour ago and I thought it was really cool. But in general, I think one of the big things is like my son realizes that I am very easily distracted and that I can get overwhelmed with too many things going on. So he will say, he sometimes, and this is not the best thing to learn about yourself, but it's important. He sometimes calls me distracted guy. You know, he'll say, you know, he's like, hey, distracted guy, that's not what we're doing right now. And it'll be like, I'm playing with him or we're supposed to be working on homework. And I get like a work text or work email. And in my mind, like, this is the most important thing, but usually it is something that could wait until we're done with his thing. And so he'll say, hey, distracted guy, he's helping me be more present, which is something I'm always working on.
I love that. I think all parents can, like, listening to this can agree to that. And I thank you very much for sharing, you know, your thoughts on fatherhood. I love the three pillars you guys have, the three values. Your book, Outside the Wire, talks about 10 lessons you've learned in life. Of course, we're going to put links where people can purchase that book. But can you just share like one of those lessons with my audience that you've learned?
Sure. And it's one that's really on message with what we've been talking about, which is that you live your life with your friends and your family, not your accomplishments. Which is a quote actually from my favorite ball player growing up, George Brett, Hall of Fame third baseman for the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah.
And that's actually a quote from his Hall of Fame induction speech, which I think is relevant, right? I mean, he's at the ultimate of his career. He's reached his goal. He's literally accepting his induction into the Hall of Fame. And he talked about how, you know, you don't live your life with these things. You live your life with your friends and your family. And the thing is, interestingly, that is the title of the one chapter of my book that if I ever do a second edition, I'll edit. And it's because that's the chapter of my book where I spend basically a whole chapter trying to convince myself that I don't have post-traumatic stress. Yeah. And, 2 months after that book came out and did well, hit the bestseller list and everything, I went to the VA to get help for post-traumatic stress. So interestingly, it's a good example of what I was talking about a minute ago, which was I understood at arm's length what the right balance in life was, but I didn't have the capacity to strike that balance at that time. And so a big part of the last 2 years for me has been making that lesson that I was able to teach to others but not live myself a reality in my own life.
So powerful. I mean, there's so many things that just in life that we see that we need to change or things that we kind of need to do, and it's there, and it's kind of like we put it on the back burner and we're always looking at it, and we're just kind of like, I should do this. I should do this. I should do this, right? And then when you finally do, you're like, why didn't I do this earlier? So
yeah.
And what you said about, you know, just what you got from George Brett's speech, that is very powerful too, because I think that's very significant with this, you know, conversation we're having on parenthood and fatherhood. Just in the sense of like, you know, distract the dad. Like, hey, distract the guy. What are you doing? Like, you just want to make sure that, yeah, you might have accomplished something in your career, but nothing is going to, like, your awards and accolades aren't going to be around you on your deathbed, right? If you've done it right, your family's going to be there with you, right? So I agree with that. And I know this is kind of a weird question, but just want to get, especially you know, serving the Army, then being Missouri's Secretary of State, and with everything that's going on, I usually, like, this is not trying to be political or anything like that, and I usually kind of stay away from politics, but, like, you've experienced so many things in these different positions. You've seen the world through different lenses and all that, and I feel like this year, of course, 2020, there's so many things that put a damper in the different, I guess, colors on the situation of life and how people are perceiving how things are going. What is something like, I just feel like the art of debate, the art of conversation is lacking in these times, and especially the way maybe news is distributed and shared and all that. Especially, like, I've talked to my kids, and this is, I'm bringing it kind of back to fatherhood, but also with the different things you've experienced in your career, where, like, I'll tell my oldest who's 12, I'm like, hey, if you go out, and, like, she doesn't have any social media accounts yet, but if she does, and she starts looking up things, I'm like, before you comment, before you go in on one side or the other side, like, look at both sides, see what you really feel about that before you just judge something on 240 characters or something on an Instagram post. For you, I know, especially with everything that you're doing with your podcast, with your book, and just the circle that you keep, like, you definitely are with me kind of like on social media, but, like, do you think the way that, I know this is for me to get to the long question, but I'm sorry, do you think the way the news and just things are perceived right now are hurting people in general because everyone has, like, this negative mindset? I know 2020 is a really bad year with all the things happening, but, like, when your son gets older and sees all the stuff going on, how do you feel like we should kind of maybe see a change the way news is shared or the way news is sent out into the world?
Let me answer this in a way that sort of takes the question, turns it around, and works from the back end. And here's what I mean. If you look at the way the media works in terms of, you know, you've got your partisan media, right? You got your Fox News and then everything else. And people tend to look at it, particularly politicians, and blame the media for our polarization. And I actually think that that's backwards, because I think that the polarization of our system is reflected in the media, because, you know, everybody who's delivering news is a for-profit corporate entity that's just trying to please their customer, right?
Mm, yeah.
And we live in a time where it is the longest consecutive period in American history with no mandatory service. And what that means is that it is no longer the case like it once was that most people have some shared experience, even in times where we have been even more racially divided. You know, other than the Civil War, this is really the most polarized we have been as a society. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that Americans don't really know each other anymore. Mm. You know, it used to, and the role the media plays in this is a couple of things. One, it used to be that, you know, you would go into a job interview, particularly if you were a man, you would go into a job interview, and one of the early questions would be, what'd you do in the service? So there was already some sort of cultural connection. And then if you were a woman, it was, what did you do during the war? Right? For a long period. So there were some things that were in common. And the media part of this is that even if you didn't have those things in common, when you went to work and you went to the water cooler, there was a 1 in 3 chance that you and the person at the water cooler with you watched the same thing on TV last night. and you got the same news one way or the other, right? It didn't change that much depending on which channel you watched or which paper you read. And now people can choose their own adventure and they can choose their own reality. And on top of that, we literally physically do not know one another, right? Like, I live in Kansas City. Kansas City's historic segregation line is a road called Trist Avenue. That's what separates the west side, which is the white side, and the black side, which is the east side. And, you know, that's not the law anymore, but it's functionally still the case. And there are not a lot of people in my town who live west of Trist who know people east of Trist. And we have a lot of steps we need to take to increase levels of national service, increase interaction between one another, to do something about the fact that what really constitutes an American national identity at this point? Is it that one in three Americans watch the Super Bowl, or that, you know, everybody has a strong view one way or the other on Taylor Swift? Like, it's hard to tell what is that national American identity. And politicians routinely say what unites us is we're all Americans. But nobody really asks the follow-up question, what does that really mean right now? And to get to your question, yeah, it really affects people's ability to share news and information and opinion in a way that doesn't cost them relationships, which is why we have our podcast. I mean, Majority 54 is, you know, we're progressives, but the whole idea of the podcast is to take the approaches that I learned as a progressive guy who got elected in a red state and, you know, got a lot of votes from people who, you know, I got 220,000 votes from people who voted for Trump on the same day. And, but yet, like, I'm a progressive. And so we take those skills of how to actually relate to people and have conversations that might be where you disagree, but in a way that is respectful and allows people to maintain their relationship with their very conservative aunt, and maybe even persuade their very conservative aunt. And the argument we make is that if you want to change people's minds in this country, it's not about TV ads and it's not about big campaigns. It's about the 54% of Americans, in my case, you know, my point of view, did not vote for Donald Trump, talking to the other 46%. That's the most powerful thing that can happen, because the relationships that exist in your life, those people have credibility with you. If you see something, see an article that doesn't agree with your worldview, you have a million different ways to dismiss it and say that it's built into us now, right? It's, oh, well, it's this news source. Oh, this person said it. I don't like them. But if your friend from church shares that same information on their Facebook page, now you have fewer ways to dismiss that information because you like your friend from church. They have credibility with you. And so that's really what our podcast is about. It's about how to persuade the people in your lives.
I appreciate your answer, and I appreciate you answering that question, just because when I was, like, you know, doing some research on you, I was like, if anybody can answer this question, I think in a great way, it'd be you. So, like, that's why I was excited for that. So thank you very much for that. Now we got the Fatherhood Quick Five. Favorite family movie? Do you guys have one right now?
Yeah, Penguins of Madagascar. You ever seen that movie?
The Northern Wind, or the North Wind.
That is a fantastic movie. Like my wife and I quote that movie to each other even when my kid's not around. I mean, yeah. It's just that it's such a good flick. Yeah.
So cheesy tipples. Ours. Cheesy tipples. Yeah, our family loves it. And when my father-in-law comes to watch that, like movies we watch, like, put that one on, because he has, like, these, like belly laughs every time you see the Penguins. So I love it. Great choice right there. Raising your son right. Favorite family song, or is there an artist you couldn't wait to introduce your son to?
Yeah, Robert Earl Keen. I'm from Kansas City, so it's country music is, you know, I kind of grew up on country. I like everything. But Robert Earl Keen is a Texas songwriter. It's like red dirt style country. And he's my favorite artist. My wife and I have seen him in concert a bunch of times. And he has a song called I'm Coming Home that, you know, I just used every time I was getting on a plane to come home. I used to listen to it, and which was a lot. And so it's just really meaningful to me. So whenever we're having like a nice family moment, we will usually put that song on, and my son knows all the words. And,
nice.
That's
fantastic. And again, I know everyone's kind of staying at home, but describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
I really like Hawaii. It probably would be Hawaii or spring training in Arizona.
Nice.
Getting down to watch the Royals. So I wasn't able to do it this year, obviously it got canceled, but the previous 4 years I've gone, I used to go down there when I was younger too. And I was this year was going to be the year that I was going to take my wife and my son down. And it's really special anyway, but for me, you know, I'm fortunate. I'm pretty good buddies with a good friend in the front office. And so when I go down there, I get to do the whole go back and hang out with the players. And so, you know, I grew up idolizing George Brett. I've indoctrinated my son to idolize this guy who retired like 30 years before he was born. And I mean, my son on all his teams, he wears number 5 and the whole thing. And George Brett is always at spring training in uniform doing the hitting coach thing. And now I know him a bit. So like, hopefully this next year will be the first, my son was really excited about this year, yeah. But that's probably the perfect one. Cause I'm going to go down. We're going to go watch all the players true loves, take batting practice and hang out with George Brett. And I think that'll just to watch my son, that is going to blow his mind. And so that's probably it.
Love it. Really cool. And again, because I know, you know, follow you on social media and see what you're into. I know you're kind of like me, a Star Wars geek. So two-parter for number 4 for the Father Quick 5. Favorite Star Wars movie and favorite character?
Okay. Favorite Star Wars movie is Return of the Jedi.
Oh,
nice. I just, that whole opening with the escape from Jabba and the hole in the ground, like, I just think that whole thing is just truly incredible. In fact, we were about 2 hours ago, he and I were working on a Lego Star Wars thing, my son and I. Favorite character, probably Han Solo.
Okay.
But that's, I was thinking, like, that's a pretty unoriginal answer, but I can't think, it's I don't know. What about you?
No, you like what you like. Mine's probably one of the most unoriginal. It's like Luke Skywalker. So, like, I feel you on that. Like, of course, yeah, I'm 41, so growing up in that age of just, you know, the original trilogy. I love actually all 9 of the movies. So I might be a unicorn in that. But, like, I just, for me, like, I'm like, Luke Skywalker was great in just all the films, and that character spoke to me a lot. So thanks for sharing that. And lastly,
By the way, though, I'm with you on, like you were saying, it's rare to like all 9 of the movies.
Yeah,
I'm 100% with you on that. And one thing I don't get is every time a new movie would come out, it was like cool to crap on it. Like it was cool for people. Like you had to prove you're a real Star Wars fan by how much you hated the new movie. And I'm just like, every time I sit in the theater and the music starts and it says Star Wars on the screen in big yellow letters, like, what else do you want, man? Like, the story's continuing. Just enjoy it. So I'm with you. Like, I thought the last 3, you know, the final 3, I thought were incredible. So yeah. I'm with you.
Nice. Appreciate that, Jason. And lastly, top 3 words you hope your son would use to describe you as a dad.
Top 3 words. Oh, wow. Okay. Fun. Listener. Which I think I got a lot of work to do on that one, but fun and, you know, a listener. Honestly, like, I'll be a little vain, strong. Like, when my son, I mean, it's a little vanity there, but when every time I open something for him that he can't open, or I lift something for him that he can't lift, and he's like, man, Dad, you are so strong. Every time that happens, I'm aware that there's a finite nature to his wonder at my, you know, strength. And I just am really, I'm enjoying this period of my life where he just thinks that I'm like the strongest person in the world.
I love that, man. That's fantastic. Again, Jason, thank you very much for your service. People, follow Jason on Twitter at Jason Kander. Check out his podcast, Majority 54, and pick up his book, Outside the Why, wherever books sold. And, of course, we'll put up links on where people can buy that. And, of course, follow him on the interwebs. Again, really appreciate your take on fatherhood and just our conversation here. And I wish you and your family continued success in the future, sir.
Thanks, man. I really enjoyed this. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to theartoffatherhood.net.